my wife was kind enough to work the booth at the Gretna Craft Fair this weekend while I worked a booth at the Omaha QuadCon with my friend Rich. And somewhere along the way, someone gave me COVID. I didn't realize that I was really sick because I'd had a cough for a couple of weeks that was very persistent. And then on Monday, I really started to get sick. And on Tuesday, I wasn't getting any better. And suddenly I lost my sense of smell and taste. So this is the second time I've had COVID where it takes away my smell and taste. And I'm sorry to all of you that I interacted with along the way. I had no clue that it was COVID. It's been long enough like this. I didn't feel that particular kind of sick. I don't know. Who does know? Apologies to any random strangers and friends who interacted with me over this period of time. Hopefully, this one got me worse than it would get you, or you don't get it at all. And anyways, this is going to be a fun conversation I had with Benjamin Wallace, great author, fantastic AMMO student, as well as somebody who does a lot of shows as well. I hope you learned a ton. And yeah, again, apologies if I interacted with you and you get sick because of me being a vector. Please enjoy my conversation with Benjamin Wallace.
This is TRBM Ammo Edition. If you're a published author and want to make a living writing books and selling them to avid readers, you've come to the right place. There's simply no program that's more successful at driving readers towards the books you've written. So the only thing you have to worry about is writing a great book. And the system with Enamo takes care of the rest. Thanks for listening to this conversation.
I accidentally saw your ad. I don't know why your ad decided to target me, other than I probably am an ideal reader for you. But I'm also not a buyer on Facebook. I'm not that person who goes out and makes a purchase based on Facebook. The exception to that rule would be like programs such as AMMO. I bought AMMO, I believe, through a Facebook ad. And that would be like one of the rare exceptions to the rule. But it's funny, I don't understand targeting completely. And I think that things are changing within Meta quite quickly right now. But when I saw your ad, I was just like, holy shit, that's a beautiful ad. It looks perfect. Saw the guy in the gas mask.
Okay.
And it really, really spoke to me. And so I immediately ripped off everything that I could for my own ad, because you and I are working in pretty similar genres where we're blending some things. Like yours is Monty Python meets... help me out here. Monty Python.
Mad Max meets Monty Python.
Mad Max meets Monty Python. And I was like, that's exactly what I'm trying to do. It is slightly different genre, but mine, I go to a lot of book shows and like Comic-Cons and stuff. And at Comic-Cons, I always tell people that mine is Sin City meets Groundhog Day. So it's got, you know, that like, yeah, dark noir.
Sounds fun. Yeah.
But the humor, you need that element of humor in there. And I think it can be really challenging to prep people mentally for that moment of like, okay, we're going to go into some dark territory. There's probably going to be blood and guts, but you're also supposed to laugh.
Yeah. A lot of my stuff is dark like that. And like you say, the Comic-Cons, we've been doing those just the last couple of years. I think we got started just once they were kind of coming back out of COVID. We just hadn't done them. And I regretted it instantly not having done them a decade ago, just because you are learning very quickly what resonates and what doesn't. And through a lot of the table sales and talking to people at the tables, that's how we really narrowed down our messaging to which reviews were really clicking, what kind of synopsis were really clicking with people. I mean, you've got less time in person, I think, than you do even on the internet to make that connection. So it really helped us with a lot of our, I've got several series, and it's really helped us refine a lot of messaging for a lot of them, just being thrown into the fire there and trying to talk to people real quickly and get them interested to buy the book. So that's where that Mad Max meets Monty Python was a review from a reader a long time ago. But when we started kind of holding that up a little bit, that was just like, okay, I get it. I'm in, you know, it was really instant.
So. Yeah. So little known fact, even for this podcast, which I talk about myself plenty, you'll probably get that feeling as we're going through. You're like, will this guy ever shut up? But my wife and I, our very first date was at her house. And we sat and watched Monty Python Search for the Holy Grail. And we held feet for the very first time ever. It was very romantic. Just her feet up on a little ottoman. And I kind of moved over and decided, like, could I touch her or not? And, you know, the rest is history. We have three beautiful boys and a great life. So I love that you've kind of targeted what you're doing based on reader responses from live Comic-Cons. Tell me about the first show. Why did you decide to go to the very first show? Was there a person that said, like, you should do this? Or did you just have an inspiration like a lightning bolt? What was that?
I got very fortunate. One of my readers was actually a volunteer at Dragon Con out in Atlanta.
Oh,
and he reached out
one.
To me and he said, hey, yeah, he said, hey, if I put your name in and you got invited, would you come out here for this? And I'm like, yeah, I'd wow. definitely like to check that out. So I was real lucky. I got invited to the Apocalypse Rising track. The director there invited me out to come sit on some panels. Actually, and that was 2019, and then 2019 didn't happen.
Yeah.
But it was just put on hold till the next year or whatever. And so we were coming up to go to Dragon Con. I was going to say, I'd never been on a panel. The last time I was at a Comic Con was in college, a long, long time ago. So we just started going to some local ones just to kind of get a feel for them and just really kind of, it just clicked with some of the people that were there in the local shows and stuff like that. And we just fell into it and had such a great time at Dragon Con and got to meet so many amazing people.
Yeah.
That, you know, it was like, hey, I want more of this. And then when we started doing the shows a little more locally, getting a table, getting a vendor table, all that, we found out very quickly the benefits of, you know, just getting to talk to people and chat with them and see what really resonated. So.
What is author marketing mastery through optimization, you ask? I'm going to tell you. It's the best way for us authors to make a living selling our books. Are you tired of hearing gurus tell you your book is only good enough to be a lead magnet for services? Are you tired of feeling like you have to be a slave to social media and then frustrated when the time you spend doesn't actually help you sell books? I was too, until I found Ammo. Ammo is the only program that reliably produces results, and it works for anyone. Is it hard work? You bet. Do you have to overcome some of your own prejudices to make Ammo work for you? Absolutely. But rather than being another program that rah-rah shishkoom boss tries to get you emotionally excited only to offer unclear methods, Ammo shows you how to design profitable ads step by step through a unique, highly tested and targeted formula. The founder, Steve Piper, is a data-loving, formula-driven author who escaped the kingdom of Amazon to build a platform for himself, where he sold directly to his readers and built a loyal following and millions of copies sold. With Ammo, you know who's reading your books, how to contact them, and what they want to read next. If you've always been frustrated with Amazon's wall of mystery of not knowing who's reading your books and losing 50 to 70% of your hard-earned money that you're making through sales, Ammo solves all of those problems by putting you in the driver's seat and showing you how to fulfill your books directly to your readership. Click the link in the show notes to learn more.
My background, you mentioned your wife as well. My wife's a very big part of this. She's the one that's really dug into the Ammo, the back end of it, the numbers and everything. But you know, she's been with me through this whole thing, and our background is actually advertising. I'm a copywriter by trade, and she was an art director. So we thought we knew what we were doing. We should have known what we were doing. We've been doing it for 20 years, but once we got into talking to people face to face, it really changes the game and really. Again, it helps you really refine that message and see what makes them light up, what makes them stop, even at the shows, we have a big ad that says Mad Max meets Monty Python, because that just stops people cold. So
yes, Yes. So I guess one of the questions I have for you, and this is of my own personal interest, so hopefully it connects with listeners as well, is I, like you, come from a kind of adjacent background where I was an upper level management for a large sales company. And so I was deeply embedded in the world of sales. And as a consequence, more than anything, I got really good at in-person sales. I know how to do that thing, and it's almost unconscious at this point. Like, if you ask me how I do it, I can no longer really tell you. The issue that I found, and you said this, so I'm really curious to hear more from you, is how do you translate the in-person to the digital? Because I'm still personally struggling with that. I've been not only the biggest fan of Ammo, but a client for quite a long time. And I still have yet to run a long-term profitable funnel with my books. And I think that's partly because I still don't understand how to translate what clearly works in person to what works digitally.
I think what we've seen at the shows, we'll have a few elements that like just really get people's attention. I've got another series called Dads versus Zombies, and you will see every single person walk by with a son going, "Dad, you should buy that." Or they just laugh and say Dad versus Zombies. And even in the Mad Max stuff, we also have I had a fan draw a map of the post-apocalyptic world from my series, and it's just amazing. So I kind of asked him if I could put that on the table. That drew people over, so we even have a bigger version of it now. So we started to see what were the big flashy points, the merchandising almost of it all, what would get people to stop and pause and come to the table. And then the next job was to get them to listen to what the book was about. So like Dads versus Zombies is a good example. Like I'd probably rattled on far too often in the past before talking to people, but when now they walk up to the table, like, "What's this about?" And like, it's about three suburban dads that have to work together to save their families when the zombies rise up, but they've been neighbors for so long they hate each other. And that's usually enough right there, because it's then I might add in, it's based on a true story. Not the zombies, I just really hate my neighbors. So, and it's something everyone can relate to. So it's they come over for that, the logo, the big Dads versus Zombies. That's enough to bring them in. A little bit more explanation entices them. They can see how they relate to it. And then the biggest thing, well, I wouldn't say the biggest thing, Ammo's unlocked a lot of things for us, and just direct sales. We've kind of looked at that for years, and by finally doing it, the thing we found that works the best at shows, the biggest tool we had was bundling. Just, hey, three books for, we usually do $20 paperback, and then we do three for 50.
Oh, okay,
And
nice.
I rarely sell a single book. It's almost always
Wow, okay.
three in a series, or hey, give me the first of three different series.
Right.
So we're trying to do that a lot with the ads as well. Like, we still lead with that big
Sure.
image. We have you mentioned the man in the gas mask. We have a whole series of imagery that should hang together. And that's kind of our background experience in advertising. Many images look like from the same series. We just give it kind of a similar look and feel using some Photoshop tools. But again, there's that, okay, I know this is apocalyptic. Mad Max meets Monty Python interests me. And then when you read into it, there's a quick description. And then, and then they click on it. Here's a hell of a bundle deal. I mean, I think we're doing six books for 20.
So it's worth pausing right there because I wonder, and I don't know what your answer is actually going to be here. Is your deal online different than your deal in person? So the two things I want to front load that with is one, I'm currently doing 3 for 35, and I've been very successful at the 3 for 35 rate. My books are each somewhere in the neighborhood of 250 pages. So just pushing that 90,000 word range, are your books bigger, or am I missing out on money? Am I leaving money on the table?
I think you might be missing out on some money. Mine are 60 to 70,000 words. I think there's definitely at the shows, you have signed books, and when I do sell them online, I sell them signed as well for right now. And yeah, we'll offer the same deal online, 3 for 50 paperbacks or $20 each.
And
And
those are converting for you at a reasonable rate?
yeah, when we have them, we've been doing this for about. We're coming up on only the end of 2 months, and I keep running out of books. We've always got more on the way, which is nice. We also did
Wow, that's a good problem to have.
one thing I've been blown away by. We were doing shows, and I was trying to think of a way, because my biggest series is the Duck and Cover Adventures, the post-apocalyptic series, and we were trying to think of a way to do a really cool box set for the whole thing. So we ended up packaging all six books in an ammo can, in a steel ammo can. We have we make stickers as well. So we have some branded stickers, we have a mini art print, and we have one of the major problems in my apocalypse is super smart bears. So we did a branded super smart bear bell as well. So there's this whole box that's I mean, it's a metal ammo can, and we charge, I think,
Wow.
125 at the show for it.
Oh,
And we
wow.
didn't I didn't think they'd translate to online, but I keep Walmart's got me on a list. I keep buying them out all their ammo cans, and I'm sure every time they
Oh,
get
good
some in, I
grief.
clear them out, and I'm sure they're watching me now. So
Yeah, right? They're
yeah,
like, this guy's actually preparing for some kind of apocalypse right now.
but yeah, the bundle, and it's funny because our background is promotions in advertising and putting these packages together and all that stuff. So I'm actually having a lot of fun even mailing things out. I include a lot of freebies, a lot of stickers, a lot of stuff like that. We just did a dad's promotion yesterday where I was promoting the Dad's Versus series. There's three books in that. That's the zombies. And we made a giant sticker. Hey, here's the bundle, but today you can get this sticker. It's just something to kind of tip it over the edge, you know, something they can only get here. So we have a lot of fun with the bundles, and that, I think that's a big part of selling direct, is the ability to do that, the ability to give people that offer.
I love it. That's wild. I have not even begun to explore the edges of what people might be able to buy. And I'll be the first person to tell you that I leave money on the table all the time for different reasons. I still struggle in my mind to believe that people give a crap about what I'm doing. So there's always a sense of pleasant surprise when I go to the Comic Cons and to the different craft fairs and places that I appear when I sell so well. But I love hearing that those kind of things are working well for you. And I think that one thing you didn't mention but is implied is that you're building your brand and a sense of loyalty when people dive into those things. I am curious. And I know that you have several series, so you probably have no issue with this, but do you find that all of the different marketing adventures, especially the ones that are a bit adjacent to writing, take you away from the next book? Or what's the process so that doesn't happen for you?
We have in the past. I've been previously, I've been kind of keeping my foot in both worlds, the writing world, and still doing some freelance copywriting and stuff like that. And actually, since we started Ammo, I think that I don't have to do that anymore. But I just like creating. We do so much weird stuff. We had started doing the shows, and we found out quickly that a lot of people aren't readers. I mean, they just aren't. They don't even look at you. So one thing we thought was, going back, like, what could we do to, kind of get people just to stop? What else could, what colorful thing could we put on the table to stop people, just to get the conversation started, kind of thing? And I came up with this silly idea called Twisted Spirit Animals. And the idea is, we can't all be tigers, you know. Some of us are more like a kitten with a prison shank is one of our most popular twisted spirit animals, and that's cute, cuddly, kind of stabby. And it quickly blew up into a whole other table at these shows. We sell stickers and prints and stuff like that, and it felt like it could be a little distracting, but the truth is, like, it's so different than the writing that I can write until I'm kind of done for the day, and then I can pick up the pencil and start drawing a little bit, and it's still that creative outlet. My mind can still process a lot of what's going on in the books for tomorrow while I'm doodling. It's just like a different part of it. So
Of course.
I don't know. You know, I have so much. Our whole brand is our tagline is make fun. All we want to do is make fun stuff, make fun of things, just have a good time. So when we do silly little things like t-shirt designs or these box sets or whatever, I think they just kind of add to the elements, so they don't really, I don't think they detract. It's almost, it's really in all of that, it's kind of using a different part of the creative, your creativity. So
Yeah, for
by the
sure.
time I'm exhausted from writing, I'm ready to play around with some other stuff. It's almost refreshing versus draining.
Sure, absolutely.
It
I'd
is a
like to
lot to keep
know.
track of, though.
It
It really
is.
is. Yeah.
Yeah, you know what? I have so, and this has really been the last couple of months. I did experience kind of a I'm trying to decide the words I want to use. A tragedy. I don't know. It feels almost tragedy feels light. But anyways, we had a thing as a family that was pretty tough. So like the last couple of months have been weird for me because of that. But I decided somewhere in the midst of that to pare down the things I'm focusing on. and really decide like what is going to make the biggest impact on the rest of my life and do that right now. Not like do it 30%, but do it 100%. And one of those things actually was stepping back from writing. As weird as that possibly sounds, I was like, there's no point for me, and everybody has to decide this for themselves, but there's no point for me in writing if I don't have readers. And so I better figure out how to get a high volume of readers coming into my world, or why am I doing it? Some people write for themselves, and I'm totally fine with that. I'm not here to argue that point of view. But for me, it was like, I need to get this figured out before I continue on. And so you have this group of people out there. I won't mention any names, but they really are committed to this idea that your next book is the best advertising for your previous books. That is true to a point. It's really tough to make a living on a single book unless you hit the zeitgeist. But once you have a series of books and enough books out there that people can buy these bundles, then more books don't necessarily advertise for previous books. And especially when you jump series, I'm curious to hear from you as somebody who's a copywriter, as somebody who's had a lot of success in different arenas and been doing this now for close to 5 years. What are the, like, have there been moments where you've pulled back from creative to really focus on marketing? Have there been moments where you've just thought, you know what, I need to step back from marketing to really focus on creative? What's the balance?
It's actually, I've been at this a little over a dozen years now, I think. I think I started in 2011. And back
I'm
then,
just
it
going
was
from
great.
The Dragon Con, basically.
Sure.
Like, I'm.
No, a lot, yes, in that whole span, a ton, and to different extremes. I got really lucky when I first put some stuff out there because there wasn't a lot of people clamoring for attention. I think I put my first book out. I'd had another one sitting in a desk, you know, collecting dust before Kindle. And after that first one kind of got some traction, I was able to release that rather quickly. So I had a couple books in the, you know, there used to be a category on Amazon called comic fiction that's no longer there. And I was like, they were in the top three for 6 months way back when, without doing a thing, you know. So it was certainly a different time. But over the course of things, yeah, you get we started to see some marketing work. And then you really push hard on that. And then as soon as it starts to kind of flag a little bit, that's all you end up doing. Like, how am I going to get this to work again? How am I going to get this to work again? So you pull back, and then just out of necessity, there's been times I've had to focus more on freelance just to feed the family, that kind of thing. So I've always wanted to make writing, keep writing at the center of it. But no, there's like, I think when I first started, I was gung ho. I was doing 3 books a year, which still feels like a lot. I know there's people that crank them out faster, but 3 to me is pretty good. Yeah. And it slowed down to, there's been a couple of years where I didn't get anything done. It was more necessity than burnout or anything. I mean, I got burnt out on the marketing for sure. You know, this, I'm really enthused with this stuff here, because we didn't realize what we were missing was all these tools, all these metrics, all this data.
Yeah.
Like, we knew it was good to know. We knew it was, hey, I should look into that, I should learn that. But it wasn't until we finally bit into it completely that it was like, why didn't we do this 5 or 6 years ago? It was nice for us because we had a lot of stuff we could hang on it already. Like, we knew our creative was strong. We knew our art was strong. And one of the reasons you mentioned earlier, being served the ad, even though you're not a buyer, we do run a traffic ad as well for our audiobooks. Okay. And that's one that's always done well for us. So it's not even a sales ad. It's our sales objective. Okay. It's the traffic objective. So,
well, let's stop and talk about that, because I have 3 audiobooks that I pay dearly for, and I would love to figure out how to get them moving at a better clip.
It's
traffic. Is it converting for you? Like, you're actually running traffic and you're seeing sales?
Yeah, we have in the past. The biggest thing we did, I'm trying to think how long we've been in audio, maybe 5 years, maybe 4 or 5 years. Your books, I can't remember, you said about 90,000 words. I mean, length matters, because you're selling Audible. You're going for credits. You're not going for a straight up purchase.
So you're actually marketing them back to Audible in this case. You're not even worrying about.
In this
about...
case, yeah, okay. we are still exclusive to Audible for all our audio stuff.
Oh, I gotcha. Okay.
But we've been driving it. It's a value play. It's 3 books for 1 credit. We bundled them. We bundled the first 3 books in the series, and that made all the difference, because there's just I can't, there's a magic number. It's like 13 or 14 hours where you know, people buying the book with credits just explodes.
That's beautiful.
And yeah, short books don't do well because, hey, I got one credit. It's worth, it's my whole month.
Exactly.
I'm gonna get some hours out of this. Yeah.
So you can, I think, and this is literally for me right now, because I would love to try anything I can to jumpstart the audiobooks. I believe they're a really big part of the future of reading in general.
They're huge.
Yeah, they're massive. But for me, for one, I'm not exclusive. So I'm going to take a smaller share of every sale, but I could actually create a new audiobook and call it the 3-book bundle, basically. And so Audible gets to choose. Sorry, I have to think through this out loud, literally as we are interviewing, but Audible gets to choose the price for it. But they're going to do that based on the number of hours, or is this, it's literally such a value play that you don't even care. Yeah.
It's, well, the way the Audible works, it's depending on how they purchase it, there's a different pay structure. If they use a credit, it's a certain amount. If they buy it outright, it's a certain amount. And then there's another way they do it that is a third amount. So basically, I think the bulk of it has always been credits, monthly credits. Yeah.
And but like, yeah, one credit is going to translate to is it even a buck for a credit?
Oh, it's $6 or $7 for our box set. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
And you're exclusive. So I'm going to say it's probably $3 for me. So
yeah, I can't remember what it changes to. Matter. Yeah. Okay. But I think I think the same principle applies if you're selling direct with audio, you know, the bigger the value, it's made all the difference. And then we have there's 5 novels in the series and a collection of short stories. And the collection is just the first 3. And we see about 25% to 30% read through on the other books as well. All 3, the following 2 novels and the collection of short stories. And then I have the same narrator across a few series. So they do actually go into the Dads versus Zombies series generally next, because it's the same narrator. And they've got an amazing narrator too. I mean, that makes all the difference.
I'm 4 books into a 9-book series, and every single day lately, I find myself thinking, boy, it would be great if I had some central location for all of my notes, all of my plot points, character names, family lineages, you name it. I wish it was in one place because, let's be honest, the way that I am using Microsoft Word as a word processor and have 55 different documents to keep track of all of the series details that I need to access, I'm taking more time opening up files wondering, why did I name this one that? Why did I name this one that? And not getting the information I need. Enter Scrivener. You guys know that I do not advertise for things unless A, I'm using them myself, and B, I think that you could up your game, sell more books, do better marketing, and get yourself in the game better. And that is why I am now partnered with Scrivener. If you use the link in the show notes, you get a 30-day free trial, and then you can sign up as well for a discount. Click the link in the show notes to learn more.
Yes, absolutely.
A lot of my readers I've picked up through the narrator. He did another series called Space Team, which is a science fiction comedy.
Yeah.
And you know, once listeners find a narrator, they're not leaving them. You know, they'll listen to whatever they read regardless of the author a lot. They buy more for the narrator sometimes than the author. Yeah.
I do that a lot.
If they read it, I'll listen. So I picked up a ton of readers that way.
That's
which
awesome.
Was really nice. It was probably about the same time during the pandemic, my ebook sales cratered. My audiobook sales exploded. I couldn't. Mm. I figured no one's commuting, no one's listening, but it was everybody at home putting on the headphones to ignore the spouse, right? Like, I'm not working. Leave me alone. They put that on and do that. But they have not slowed down since then. And it's a huge part of what we're doing now.
Yeah. I talk to my wife a lot about this, is that like there is a moment where you hit a certain stride and then things just go for you. And so I really trust that. And I trust for a lot of people who listen to this podcast, many, many of them are looking for that aha moment and just try and hang in. And so that podcast, I hope that this podcast addresses that need of just like, if it's not working today, definitely test, just like Ammo teaches you to definitely pivot and learn things, but also stick to it. I think that that's really challenging for us sometimes in the midst of failure. So I'm wondering, can you dig back to a time where you weren't having the experience you're having now, and you had to make a tough decision to say, you know what, I would rather keep doing this and failing than stop doing this. Is there a moment that leaps out at you like that?
Certainly I think 2013 was when I finally got to come home and write somewhat full time. Like I said, I still kept my toe in the freelance pool of copywriting. But between copywriting and books, I was able to make a go of it for about 10, 9 or 10 years. And last year, or not last year, the year before last, I had to go back to work. I had to take a full time job. That was it was just the way things were working out. The audio was staying strong, couldn't make anything else go. It was just we had experienced luck with Facebook before they blacked out Apple and everything like that, before all those changes. And it just we were never able to replicate it again after that, before Ammo. It was a matter of, we have to, something's got to give. But I was able to go back to work. And just also, it was actually really nice. It was like, I kept telling, I went to a place where it was just filled with friends and wonderful people. And I didn't have, it was remote. I didn't have to go in. It was the nicest way to work. And it was a nice break. I told them, like, I'm here for a vacation. Like, I'm coming back. I want to do this, but I need a break from marketing and all the things we were doing book-wise for so long. And it was a nice little respite. It was, you didn't have to worry about sales or anything. And you were able to take a step back, look at everything, like, how are we going to market this? How are we going to do it without the pressure to make it work for that afternoon, so there's money the next day or whatever. But writing was something, I don't know, I like having readers. It's I don't know, I don't know that I'd be writing just for myself. I'd always be trying. Whether it was working or not, I think I'd keep trying. I have too much
Yes,
fun doing it.
exactly.
It's what I've always wanted to
Likewise.
do. So there's always stories to get to. We were starting to see some success with the Twisted Spirit Animals too, which was a little frustrating, honestly, because, like, I'm not an illustrator by any stretch of the imagination, so I thought, and I've drawn, like, now, like, 48 of these animals. And we would go to a show, and they're colorful, bright, they're fun. People get it right away. They
Absolutely.
know you can pick. You walk up as a family and start going, you're this, you're that, you're a penguin with a pickaxe. No, you're a raven with an arson kit, all these things. And they were just having a blast laughing. And my wife would work that table, and I would work the book table standing right next to her. And I'm all jealous of them paying attention to my stuff over there. Like, but here's the things that matter to me. Read the books. It was a nice break. I think you almost need that every once in a while to take that step back. But I think I'll always be writing. I don't know in what form, but again, it's even going back to that job. That job was great. It ended in November. It lasted exactly 1 year. It was exactly what I needed. It was ideal. It was The work was fun, challenging, not frustrating. The people were fantastic. Like, everything was good about it, and I was still miserable just because I was not doing all this. As
That really
frustrating as
speaks to
this
me.
can be, as frustrating as this can be, this is what I was meant to do, So.
I love you. You made a caveat that I think is really important. Is earlier I had said, like, I can't see any point in writing if I don't have readers. And then you added to that really and said, like, I'd always be doing this. And I think, if I'm understanding you correctly, it's because you always believe the readers are coming, even if they aren't in front of you right now in the way that you want them to be. You just have this drive, this absolute belief, like, the stuff is good, and so they are coming. They're coming, and I'm going to continue to hang on. That's been core to me all this time. Like, I look at the main book in my detective series, and I just always think, I know, despite everything, I know that she speaks to people, and I know that she's going to be an important part of people's lives. And so you just hang it and you just keep doing it, because she speaks, or he speaks, or whoever your character is or your story is, it speaks, and you have to listen to that very loud and persistent voice.
I also just really like the company, right? Like, I mean, part of what when I put the first book out on Kindle, How do you, that's like, how do you get the nerve? Where do you get the nerve to even do this? Who are you to put this out there? What finally sold me on it, my thinking was just like, I am not that unique of a person. If I find this nonsense entertaining and funny, there's got to be other people out there like me find it funny too. And that's, it's comforting to know that, I think I put half the jokes in there just for myself. And when
Of
people
course.
call them out there, I'm just like, oh, like a kindred spirit kind of thing. So, that's, I don't know if I could do without that at this point. I like just affirmation that I'm not crazy. And I know they're out there, and yeah, I've just been fortunate enough to find them in a, in a great way. And it's, it's few and far between. It's, but I've had people come up at shows and they've got a tattoo of the first line of the book, and it's just like, it's crazy. I saw something someone put up on the ad the other day. I think it was the dog ad. You saw the guy with the dog. They posted a picture of their puppy. They named it after the character in the book, and it's just like, this is insane. This is so much fun.
Those feelings, sir.
And I just do have the best readers. They are just supportive and everything. I had a health scare last year, and they were there for me. I had a heart attack early last year and
Oh,
just had to
geez.
slow down a little bit. And yeah, they were fantastic. They were just so supportive and patient. They're like, "Where's book six?" I'm like, "I'm in the hospital with a heart attack." "Oh, take your time. It'll be okay. Yeah, we can wait then. Get well." Stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my goodness. Yeah, absolutely. I know that feeling and the occasional email that you get where somebody tells you about your book. I had one just yesterday, actually. A really nice lady reached out and told me how much she liked the second book in my series and had done the audiobook. And she's like, I just had to find everything else you had. And those kind of emails, like part of you, the metrics part of you is like, hey, could you leave that as a review, please? But the other part is like, leave well enough alone. They just told you something amazingly nice, which is what I do. But yeah, that is the feeling you're going for, because I think in all of everything that we're doing is this real deep sense of wanting to feel like we connect with other humans. It's a little bit cruel, and I don't know that this is necessarily a conversation. I'd love to hear if you have thoughts on it, but it seems a little bit cruel that the people that we bring into our life most intimately, like you talked about your wife, my wife, those are the people who now no longer can speak to the drive. Like if my wife says, I promise your books are good, I'm like, yeah, whatever, you have to say that. You're my wife. Isn't that horrible? Isn't that a horrible thing?
It's funny. It's and she and like I say, my wife's been a part of this since day one. So it's she's been on the journey and the struggle and everything with me too. But I mean, incredibly supportive. And it's so weird, that search for validation. And it's I can't remember what the numbers are. What you need five compliments to undo one horrible remark,
Negative.
or whatever. And it's not even bad reviews at this point for me. It's like, if someone's just like dismissive of the on the ads, you're
Indifferent.
like, ah, why are you like, you don't know a thing about it. You're just dumped. The one issue, it's not an issue, but the Mad Max meets Monty Python, like that whole Jaws with paws pitch line, it's cliche and it's overdone, because it works. I mean, it works marvelously. And I tried to avoid it for a long, long time. Like I say, we're using it. It's straight out of a review. And there's another one that's The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Wasteland is another review that sometimes we use as well, because it really captures the tone of what I was going for a little bit. But people get so mad, like, oh, it's this meets this, why don't you do an original idea? And then my favorite is, you're ripping off Fallout. Like, no, I'm ripping off Mad Max. Fallout ripped off Mad Max. Let's get this straight. I'm stealing from, but it's when you have to boil it down, that the marketing to really get put that idea in their mind of what to expect, or what they can expect from this that quickly. It's just it's a very convenient way to do. And as much as we've tried to avoid it, it's just too powerful. But most of the comments I get on the mat on the ad like that, they kind of just irk me, are people just dumping on that format. It's just like, I just got to let it go.
Yeah,
Dig
absolutely.
through and find all the other ones where you say, people sent you an email like, I was in a dark time and this helped me through. And all these things, I've gotten a few of those. They just make your, man, that's enough to keep you going for a year.
Yeah.
You know, it's wonderful to know. And they actually read the book, and the person that was hating on you didn't even read it. So
Exactly. Oh, that's the
is
worst.
yeah.
I mean, and those actually is a weird thing. Like, those are the ones that don't quite get to me, but the 1-star reviews where somebody's like, I read 3 pages and I decided this was such trash, I burned it. And you're like, okay, you got 3 pages in. I'm sorry.
Yeah, thanks for
Also,
really trying.
thanks for spending, $15 to light it on fire, I guess. That's cool. I wish you would have filmed it and put that in your review. That would have really caught some eyes. So I want to do not even necessarily a pivot, but just kind of a return to part of our earlier conversation, because I think that this can be helpful for a lot of people in a lot of places, is when you're doing shows now. So let's say like Dragon Con was an anomaly. Everything since then, how do you decide what shows to attend? How do you budget for paying those shows? Let's get granular with this conversation. So I'll do my best to try to get in every question I
Sure.
can, because I think this will really help authors.
We do Dragon Con each year. I missed it last year just because of the heart
Yeah.
attack. We're going back this year. Hope to go back this year. Looks like it's all lining up. So that is one, and it's a much different event from a lot of the other stuff we do. When we went out to Dragon Con, I actually got very fortunate. I've been very fortunate in just a lot of ways, but we reached out to them saying, okay, how do we sell books out there? How do we, we'd never been, we didn't know. And I had no idea the zoo that vendor hall was, or,
Yeah.
the waiting list or whatever. And we were coming in at a weird time because we were coming in when they were just opening things back up and they were capping attendance, but a lot of guests weren't showing up. So when I first went out there, I was doing a lot of stuff on the Apocalypse track, which had initially invited me out there, but they put me on a few writing panels as well. So, I got to meet a bunch of amazing authors that I'd read growing up and everything, and
Yeah.
it was very surreal. But we reached out, and there was a said, "How do we sell books?" And they're like, "Oh, call this group." And it was a group that basically they would assemble a bunch of different authors. They would get space in the vendor hall, and you would go out and just sign books with them. They would ship the books there, and that's all you had to do. And they were nice enough to like, "Yeah, we'll have you." So the following year, we went out there and we were with them. We went to Pensacon. They invited us out to there. That was an amazing one last year too. So those are the kind of the bigger remote ones we've done. That effort has since kind of folded, unfortunately, because we were going to be doing Salt Lake City and some of the bigger
Yeah.
shows a little further away. We're out of Dallas, so
Okay.
I haven't been as far north as Salt Lake City for a show or anything. But we really enjoyed setting up a little booth at just a little local one. So we started looking into
Yeah.
some of the other ones we could do. And we did the first year or the second year we did it. When we had the books and we had the Twisted Spirit Animals, and between the two, we were always able to cover table and, make it an
Yeah.
interesting weekend. The spirit animals, especially, people really wanted them at their shows. We looked at a lot of regional stuff. We tried a little bit of everything. We tried outdoor, some outdoor local art fairs and stuff like that. And we decided we do not like selling paper in the wind. That sucks. The books will blow away everything. You're chasing things across a parking lot all day. So we
Yeah.
quickly went to indoor events only. There's a few big ones around here. We do Fan Expo each year, which is the really big one in Dallas. And then we do, and
Yep.
we just get a couple tables on Artist Alley there, and that's mostly what we do is, just Artist Alley tables, and then kind of work our way into the programming if they have any. A lot of cons don't have much programming for writers or
Right.
for authors. They're
Yep.
starting to. Fan Expo last year came to all of us, and it was just like there was maybe five or six of us there. It's like, hey, what can we do to better embrace the writers? And they're making
Cool.
some changes, which is really nice. They started doing a few
Yeah.
panels last year. And I think they're hopefully going to do more this year. There's
Amazing.
one, another one that's a couple hours south of us. It's the third biggest one in the state, and it's just a regional thing, and it's amazing. It's down by what used to be Fort Hood. I can't remember what they changed the name to, but the people there, that's our favorite show because it's big, it's busy, and everyone stops by the table and they say, "Thank you for coming to our town. Thank you for bringing this here. Thank you for being a
Wow.
part of our show." Like, they're just
Wow.
the friendliest, nicest
Yeah.
people, and it's our favorite show every year, so they're so great. But we've kind of gotten to, I think that one year we did like 26 shows, just of
Okay.
various sizes and various places, And we've kind of come down now to it was nice supplemental income for the books when things were kind of slowing down. And you always got long-term readers out of it. We always saw a spike on Amazon or Audible the following week. And it was just a great way to meet people. And but now that we've kind of now that Amazon's really working for us and things are just a lot different for our family this year. We're going to do fewer and fewer. And we found like it's almost like a critical mass. Like you almost need 50,000. Like if there's less than 50,000 people in attendance, I don't know if it becomes, I don't want to say worth it because some of the best shows we've done have been the small ones where you get to talk to people. Like they're great. We did one in Hot Springs, Arkansas that was just amazing. It was local, it was regional, and it was great. Again, just the greatest people. So there's always a benefit to doing a show outside of it's not always the money. It's the people you meet. We have met some amazing authors. The only reason I am in Ammo is because we started doing these local shows and we met an author named TB Phillips, Tom Phillips. He's a great guy and he had done the Ammo program last year and he was just like, you guys are
A
set
perfect
for
fit.
this. You are you're just, you know, with the number of books you have, the series you have, everything, you're just perfectly set to go into this. Get into it, get into it. And he's the only reason we decided to even look at or even heard of it, honestly. So you know, the people you meet are huge, and the opportunities that come up. I got to do last year there was a show locally here where one of the guests was Wes from Road Warrior, the guy that played Wes in Road Warrior, and I do the Mad Max stuff, so that was huge to me. And I got to do a limited edition print of Wes as a bear. And he, you know, he would sign them at his table and sell them and all this stuff. So like, I mean, the opportunities going to these shows are just beyond the money. But we found that, yeah, 50,000, you know, it's got to be in the tens of thousands of attendance to make it worth it for profitable, you know, as far as book sales. But I love hanging out at them. I love meeting these people. And the opportunities that it's opened up beyond that are just, I don't think I would have tried to draw anything if I hadn't been sitting next to these amazing artists, you know, that are, I was, because I'm here, I'm sitting here and I have a 300 page book about zombies that I'm selling for $20. And the guy across from me is selling a single page with one drawing of a zombie on it for $20. Well, his page to $20 is much better than mine. And I'm like, God,
Of
I got to figure out a way to
course.
sell a single page for $20 instead of writing 300 of them.
Yeah,
And
exactly.
yeah, it kind of it worked out a little bit, but just that also being around the kind of folks that are in Artist Alley, just the different artists, the different writers. It's gonna be mostly artists. There's not a lot of
Yes.
authors that really go to these
That's
shows,
right. Yep.
but
So
just being
far.
around that so far, and I think it's starting to change. I think it
I do
was
too.
in indies are certainly coming around to realize the benefit of it, and it's just being in that. Being around those kind of creative folks is just huge. It's inspiring. Like, look, everyone's trying, people that are trying something, people that are just out there with their stuff. It takes a lot to stand behind one of that table and say, look what I
Yes.
did, give me money for it.
Yeah.
It really does. And to see a whole room full of people like that are just that, I mean, it takes a lot of freaking optimism to do it. So, you know,
Yeah.
it's just a lot of good, just good people with good energy, really. So
Yeah.
we really like being a part of that. But more than
Did you
anything,
take any losers along the way? Like, were there any shows you went to where you were just like, I'm never coming back here, or good to know, like, this is not a fit for me? Like, what you talked about the audience of 50,000. So I guess one caveat that I will say, and this is partly where we're at in our different careers too, but I went to the St. Thomas something peddler's market before Christmas. It was a 4-hour thing. On like the 19th of December or something like that. So like a Thursday night shouldn't have been good, but in 4 hours I sold $500 worth of books, and I was
Oh,
like,
wow.
yeah, that's easily worth it to me. You know, I
Yeah.
mean, it's not gonna pay the bills forever, but to move that many books in that amount of time, like I'd do that any day. That's on my calendar for next year for sure.
I think and part of the reason we've kind of limited ourselves to that is because we've been doing it for 2 or 3 years now. So we've done some of these shows several times, right? If you're going into a fresh market, and it doesn't have to be as big as a show, I don't think, because it's new people. But I mean, we will go
Oh,
back to
that's
these
perfect.
shows
I'm so
that,
glad I asked that question, because that's a good caveat. If you're hitting the same market, you're going to start to get repeat customers.
Oh yeah, and a lot of the smaller shows are the exact same people every year. And it's fun though. It's Because you can go, hey, I saw you at Arlington. I saw you here, you know,
Yeah.
and they get really excited when they recognize, when you recognize them at all. It's like, how many people do you see at these things? And just,
Yeah.
but when you see them year after year, you start to, and they come back, like, I need the next book, you know, and some of them will wait the next year to buy the next book from you instead of going online or whatever. So there's
Yeah.
definitely a benefit to it. And it's, and again, it's great for a lot of other reasons, but, I think if you've been to a show two or three times and you don't have a lot of new stuff, it financially it's going to be a little more challenging. There's been a couple, only there's only been a couple shows we've done where we're like, I this just isn't we won't be doing this again, just because like there was a poor turnout or and just wasn't well organized or something like that. But I think, you know, going forward for us, at least in this, in if it's in the same area, we need a bigger crowd just to get fresh faces.
Like I said, I'm so glad that we went there because I mean that helped to kind of illuminate what you were thinking in terms of, you know, like why that size of a show matters. I'm going to go to Strawberry Festival in Arkansas, which is an outdoor event, and my paper's going to be blown all over the place. So that's one thing you've already kind of awakened for me is I better be
Just be ready
ready
for it.
for that experience. I was already a little bit nervous about it because I was like, it feels outside of my hit zone. But one of my very good friends, Joe, had told me like, you've got to come down for this show. It's like a really big deal. So
Where is that one? Is that Little Rock or is it?
yeah, Cabot. So
Okay.
basically Little Rock. Yeah. And so I'm looking forward to that. I have had, and this is the one thing I've said on this podcast a little bit, and maybe you can speak to it, maybe you can't. But as weird as this sounds, going to book fairs is probably the biggest waste of time. There's something about book fairs that is just not conducive to selling books. And you're like, that doesn't make sense, but it seems to be true.
It's interesting when you see, I can't really speak to it too much. I haven't done many book fairs. I think I would struggle to sell next to six tables of fantasy and 10 tables of romance. I really do. I think that, yeah, because you'll see people even at cons, I come up
They
with
get overwhelmed.
a bag full of fantasy books they bought from one author. I'm like, well, I don't sell fantasy. You know, it's very genre. I think it's different genres. That's why I think Comic Cons do well for us, because we are kind of this mashup of different things. It's everything I do is genre fiction, but it's with a sense of humor. It's a little, there's a
Yeah, and
twist
Mad
on it.
Max
So.
has that feel too already of like graphic novel, very, very graphic, which is the same. Sin City actually is a graphic novel, so it helps to be a fit for it. Then again, a friend of mine I've done several tables with, and he's been somewhat successful now, is doing like an X-Files kind of fiction, and he's been successful at cons. So
Yeah.
there are genres that'll do well, but
I'm a geek too. I mean, I'm a total
yeah,
geek at heart anyway, so
right.
I just fit right in with that kind of thing. So I think that's more the, it's more the pop culture mentality that I'm selling to versus a literary. I'm not selling to a literary crowd. Now, having been to a couple of gotten to talk to a few of these amazing authors, you know, they are one thing I need to look at is doing more writers' conferences. It's one thing I would like to do. They've recommended that a lot. One I've been trying to get out to for a few years is Superstars out in Colorado. Those are a lot of the authors that I've had a great chance to sit, talk to, and get to know a little bit. That's one I want to go to, but they suggest doing the writers thing, more of a networking opportunity, and it's kind of the same thing. Like what I enjoy most about Dragon Con is the show's great, but I get to go back to the hotel bar and talk to all these amazing authors, and just that people that get it, that they do what we do, and they do it so weird that we what we do, but you know, we're all kind of the same mindset. So that camaraderie is hard to find when you're sitting alone at your keyboard. So getting out there to those kind of things is great. And that's even the local Comic Cons, when you get to talk to the other authors, whether they're, you know, ahead of you in the game or behind you in the game, just to everyone's helping everybody. And it's, I haven't met a jerk yet. Like I haven't. It's amazing. Everyone's very friendly, very helpful, and you need that. I think you need that contact. So it's another benefit of those kind of things beyond, again, selling books. Can't recommend them enough. If that's the kind of piece of advice I would give folks, now get to a show, put your stuff on a table. Even if you have one book, you're not there to sell it. You're there to learn how to sell it. You're there to learn how to market it. Because even like you're asking about the ads, our backdrop at our show was gone through 20 iterations to best feed into it as well. So.
I've had so many people, by the nature of this podcast, because it is the ammo podcast, is I have a lot of people reach out to me and be like, can I do this with one book? And I pretty much just have like a spiel now that I give them, which is if you want to make money, chances are you're going to have a very hard time on one book. But if you want to learn how to sell your books for the rest of your life, absolutely. And I don't know if Steve's going to change the price anytime soon, if he already has. Last I knew, it was $1,000 to get the program. And I'm like, I can't think of a better $1,000 to drop than to do ammo for that reason. It's like it literally teaches you every step along the way of how to set up an ad and test it until you get to the point where you understand what people want. I have a good friend. She really bristled at the idea that you would write to your audience, that you would allow your audience to tell you what they're interested in. And I kind of always thought about that. I was like, well, it's a give and take, you know? I mean, you met your spouse, you met people in your life that you loved, you met friends, and how many times in your life have you changed who you are in order to fit with people that you love? And part of that is, I believe, part of that is you're discovering yourself through other people. And so as much as we write books to share our self with people, we also write books so that people will share themselves with us. And if we don't change, then maybe we're just a little too rigid in our outlook.
Yeah. Oh, like you have to be flexible for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, there's no way around it.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
Yeah.
it's like a vision of life is maybe a little overplayed. Okay,
Enough.
so in wrapping up, for one, I'd love to have you back because I feel like we only just really touched the surface. For example, I wanted to ask you about your bookshelf because you are surrounded by books, and I see Clive Cussler back there. I don't see everything else. So, in a future time, we really should talk influences and things like that. But for now, for those who are not targeted by your ads but are really interested to know you more, learn a little bit about you, and find out where should they go?
BenjaminWallaceBooks.com is my website, and then I think I'm Benjamin Wallace author on Facebook. I'm on Facebook quite a bit,
Awesome.
interacting there quite a bit. But yeah, BenjaminWallaceBooks.com is the best place to find me.
Okay, perfect. We'll send them there. Thanks so much, Benjamin, for joining the podcast, for sharing your insights. I'm going to be changing a few things that I do because of this conversation, and I hope others will as well.
Appreciate it. Thank you for having me on.
Thanks. Yeah.
Thank you for listening to TRBM. The theme music was provided by the ever-talented Christopher Talon. And hey, if you liked what you heard, share this show with other readers, because what's the point of telling stories if nobody's listening?